Welcome to the Student Housing Insight Podcast, where we are putting you in touch with the people who bring student housing to life. This episode of the Student Housing Insight Podcast is sponsored by Carter Young Incorporated. It's just a fact, unfortunately, there will always be a certain percentage of students who will graduate or leave your community owing money. Be it from damages or unpaid rent, management teams will spend a good amount of time tracking these former residents and their guarantors down to collect this bad debt. And that's another mistake. Your team needs to be focused on serving their current residents, not the ones that have left them. Let the team at Carter Young take over those accounts. They have serviced the student housing industry for over two decades now. They understand the dynamics of parental guarantors and the life cycle of debts owed by college students, and have developed a platform that will get you results in collecting on those bad debt accounts. What do I like best about Carter Young? They work with your on-site team to train them on how to make sure you have as few bad debt accounts as possible. Check them out at carter-young.com. Again, that's carter-young.com. April, welcome to the show. Glad you could join me as co-host today.
It's good to be with you today, Wes. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you and your family. You're currently in the Virginia Beach area dealing with, have they named this winter storm?
Grayson, Storm Grayson, yes. Grayson visited us over the past couple of days, and we are still surrounded by lots of snow and very cold weather.
Well, it wasn't a white Christmas, but at least everybody is getting some days off, some extra days off of school and enjoying the snow, I hope.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun.
I've had several managers or folks that I keep in touch with that are still on the on-site level that are having pipes freezing and busting and all that, and it's amazing how this winter weather can be brutal on these facilities. But hey, one of the conversations that we had right before Christmas was something that you and I had talked about for a couple of months now. On, we need to kind of answer that question that a lot of my consulting clients have for me of, hey, how do I create a relationship with the university, and what kind of options does the university, not any specific university, but universities have in relationship to partnerships or affiliations? And you know, I think one of the more popular things that universities are now doing is affiliations with off-campus partners for a lot of different reasons versus a public-private partnership. And you know, you found some great folks that could really help answer a lot of those questions. So, you know, now that we're at the end of the college football season, and we've talked about college football quite a lot as we've had folks on from Clemson and some other universities that, you know, now we're at the end of the season and there's only one undefeated college football team in the U.S., and that happens to be the University of Central Florida Knights, who won their bowl game against, it was the Peach Bowl against Auburn University. You know, the folks that you actually reached out to that is being very progressive on the affiliation path of solving some of their housing needs is the University of Central Florida. So tell our listeners a little bit about our guest this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, congratulations to the Knights, and I'm so happy for their success they've had this year with their football program. So our guests today are Dr. Annie Stark. She's the Director of Residence Life at the University of Central Florida, and she's joined with Arian Bryant, who's the Associate Director of Residence Life at University of Central Florida. So we had the pleasure of interviewing them and talking to them about how they create and sustain off-campus housing affiliations on their campus.
Yeah, Dr. Stark and Arian really had some great content. I hope everyone will lean into this and really listen to it, because it was, you know, that university is very young in and of itself. Its campus is very young, but has just really exploded in the past couple of decades. And a lot of that has been because of the type of housing partnerships that they've had within that community there. And affiliations is something that they've certainly tackled as well, and are, I don't know if I want to call it setting the standard, but they're being very creative with with how they're doing things. And I think the key thing that, you know, I really walked away from this interview is making sure that regardless of what type of partnership you're looking to have with the university, you've got to make sure that you are systematizing, I guess is the best way to put it, your communication process, meaning that, you know, when you're going through the process of saying, hey, university, you know, I want to provide housing to benefit the university, when you're looking at how that's going to operate, making sure that you've got a system for intentional and continuous communication. And they kind of really laid out how they're doing that and why that's how that's helping them succeed. Any other takeaways that you want to highlight for everybody before we get into it?
Sure. Yeah, I think the relationship building, establishing and maintaining those relationships, that's kind of weaved throughout this interview. You will find that. And also just educating off-campus partners and on what the experience is like on campus and how the off-campus experience should match the on-campus experience. And so the expectation being in affiliation agreements or any agreement would be that whatever experience students are having on campus should match the experience, or the off-campus experience should match what's happening on campus.
Yeah, because the parents are certainly expecting that as well, and they hit that. And then, you know, not necessarily the programming, because more off-campus, be it completely independent and private, or, you know, in an affiliation type of agreement with the university, you're going to have more upperclassmen that are going to go into those facilities typically. And because it's under an affiliation and the university is throwing its support behind that housing facility, parents and students are going to expect a lot of the same experience. Maybe not necessarily in res life, but again, because of it's typically more upperclassmen, but definitely with the same a lot of the other same services and of course the communication that's happening. They want to see that, you know, as being the same experience that they would have on campus.
Absolutely. So any off-campus property is going to be viewed by the parents as an on-campus property. And so those experiences need to intertwine and be seamless. And so I think that's also going to be highlighted throughout this interview for our listeners.
Well, great. Let's go ahead and hit play on this, and we'll come back at the end with any closing thoughts.
Sounds great.
Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hey, Wes.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
You know, it is, we're a week away, sitting here a week away from Christmas, and I've got probably 70% of the shopping done, so compared to last year, I'm actually doing pretty good. So, hey, listen, I want to thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast. I know a lot of people think that things are kind of slowing down on campus at this time of the year, but that I know that that's not always the case, and sometimes this could end up being the busiest time of the year. So, thanks so much to both of you guys for coming on. Really quick for our audience listeners, I want to make sure that they've got a little bit of an understanding of your background. So, Dr. Stark, why don't you take the lead on that and let us know how you got to UCF and what you're doing there now.
Sure. So I am Dr. Annie Stark. I started my career in housing and residence life more than a decade ago at Purdue University, where I earned my undergrad and started off as an RA there. From there, I transitioned to Florida and got my master's degree at the University of Florida after having been a fourth grade teacher for a hot minute. After graduating from the University of Florida, I moved to the University of Alabama, where I served as a entry-level live-in housing person there. After living in for a while, you want to still do your work and not necessarily share walls with first-year students anymore. So I moved up to Purdue University, where I was able to continue doing my work but yet live off, which was a great asset at that point in time. While there, I served as a residential life manager. I also then moved up into an assistant director role, during which time I also earned my PhD. After spending about 8 years at Purdue, it was time to move on to something different and challenging, and I made my way down here to the University of Central Florida, where I currently serve as the Director of Residence Life and Education, and I've been in that role for about 3 years now.
So tell us, Dr. Stark, going from Indiana to Orlando, other than getting to see better weather, I guess, and Mickey Mouse, what are some of the other things that attracted you to UCF?
Well, to be completely honest, it was the weather.
We and Mickey Mouse, too, wasn't it?
Yes. And so we had lived in Florida before, and then we moved back north. And the whole time we were up north, we were like, why did we ever leave Florida? So we had to come back. We love it here. The weather's great. The campus is fantastic. The University of Central Florida is a young institution. We're about 55, 56 years old. So there's a lot still being formed in terms of tradition and how we approach the world. It's a very fast-growing institution that is totally dedicated to student success in a way that I've not seen in the limited places that I've been before. And to be able to work and be a part of that environment, yes, sign me up. I'm here.
Yes, that university has grown by leaps and bounds. I think the last time that I spent a considerable amount of time in the campus area was probably about 10 years ago. And it's I was down there earlier this year, and it's a completely different landscape than what it was just a decade ago. So, and we're also joined by Arian Bryant, who's the Associate Director of Res Life. Arian, give the audience a little bit of background on what it is that you do at UCF and what got you there.
Absolutely. Well, I started my career in higher education at the State University of New York at Albany, which is a very different climate than Florida. I don't miss the 6 foot snowdrift at all. I earned my bachelor's there in political science. I stayed at the institution, earned my master's of science in education administration and policy studies with a concentration in policy analysis. Early on in my career, I thought I was going to go directly into the political sphere. I worked for a short period of time on campaigns and doing legislative research around educational policies. I stepped away from that. I loved it a lot, worked at the New York State Legislature, and an opportunity presented itself to work in housing and residence life as a living residence hall director. So in 2001, I joined the department, and I've been in housing and residence life ever since. I've worked at 4 different universities now. So after leaving the State University of New York at Albany, I went to Montclair State University, where I spent about 4 years. From there, I moved on to Rutgers, New Brunswick, which is in central Jersey. I stayed there for about 5 years. I was working on one of the 4 campuses as a coordinator. And then I moved on from Rutgers, and I took my first position at the University of Central Florida as an assistant director in February 2013. A year later, I applied and was successful in obtaining the associate director position. That was around April 2014. And I am approaching 5 years at the University of Central Florida now.
Nice. And is anything else besides good weather and Mickey that attracted you to to the Orlando area?
Well, you know what? I mean, who can beat Mickey? I mean, really. The weather's beautiful. I think it would be naive and disingenuous not to state that year-round 70-degree weather is not attractive for many different reasons. The summers can get a little warm, so if people are susceptible to heat, this is probably not a good spot for them. Very similar to what Dr. Stark mentioned, when I interviewed during my phone interview and my on-campus interview, I noticed that the university was nascent. It was a very young institution. However, you saw the potential, and based upon what people were sharing, it was growing rapidly. They were doing things that I did not experience at my 3 previous institutions, particularly when it came to working with the community and the private sector. The housing apparatus and options were very different from what I had experienced, which was much more traditional. So there were a number of different things that attracted me to UCF: the weather, a very different type of housing and residence life program, and a lot of opportunity because it was a growing institution.
Yeah, and it is very different at UCF, and a lot of that comes from that growth that Dr. Stark and I were just mentioning. And that has between that growth and other things that have happened, and kind of a more modern economic state of affairs, UCF has kind of, as you mentioned, kind of going the non-traditional route of providing housing. So for our audience listeners, can you give a little bit of background of how you separate out the different type of partnerships and housing opportunities that UCF has?
Absolutely. So I think that we can attribute this to our leadership at the very top level, our president, where he explicitly states in the fifth main goal of the university to be the leading public-private partner university. At UCF, it's a little bit different than at other institutions that have housing programs. Because of declining state and federal funds, most people know that universities are cash-strapped in terms of building new facilities. So partnering becomes both beneficial to creating more opportunities for residents to stay on campus, because we know the correlations with student development and student success, but also managing strained budgets. So we have three different types of housing options. We have university-owned, and that's very traditional in a sense. So anybody who's familiar with traditional university-owned housing, that's what we have. And at university-owned, we have four Greek houses, which is kind of a semi-partnership with fraternity and sorority life and some of the organizations that occupy those current houses. Then we have our managed facilities, and we have three different managed facilities. And the way we define managed facilities here at UCF is that our roles and responsibilities vary from each residential community. So from each one of these facilities, each one of our managed facilities, our roles and responsibilities can vary a little bit. But housing and residence life typically generally takes on the bulk of the work in terms of services provided and everything that surrounds a residential community. Then we have one affiliated property. An affiliated property is very similar to the lexicon and verbiage that people use in our field, where we went into a partnership with an off-campus pre-existing facility, but the department doesn't have a large role there. So they take care of assignments, they take care of facilities, they take care of grounds, they take care of housekeeping. Housing and residence life pretty much serves a role there to execute our residential curriculum, and Dr. Stark will talk about that, and basically monitor for safety and security, so incident report writing, crisis management. So those are our three different types: university-owned, managed properties, and then our affiliated properties.
Awesome. Thanks for separating that out for us and making that a little bit easier to understand, so that as we talk about these different relationships, the listeners have a little bit better understanding of what these different relationships mean. Because of the alternative route that UCF has taken in order to accomplish what they've been able to accomplish, it certainly got the attention of myself and April as well, who reached out to you guys and said, hey, I think this is something that we want to go over for our listeners on the podcast. And so, April, I'll kind of turn it over to you now.
Everyone, you'll have to forgive me. I have a hoarse voice today. So, Arian, I really appreciate you sharing with us the three different types of ownerships that you have on your campus. And today we're talking specifically regarding your affiliated agreements and how to establish those agreements. So let's move into you talking, sharing with us specifically, what does an affiliated agreement mean to you on your campus? What does that look like? And then if one was wanting to establish an off-campus affiliated agreement on their campus, how they would go about doing that?
Sure. So on our campus, our affiliated agreement began
I want to say maybe 10 years or so ago, and my current supervisor, Christy Hartzler, the executive director of Housing and Residence Life, was really the person that served the role to help make this happen from a housing perspective. At the time, the university, growing so fast, we had an unmet need for housing on our campus without the resources to provide more housing. Additionally, the properties along the edge of campus were experiencing safety issues and behavioral issues that were really starting to cause a town and gown relationship for the university and the city of Orlando. Therefore, entering into an affiliated agreement with one of the pre-existing apartment complexes that has around 3,000 beds, the property donated their land to the university, to the UCF Foundation, which allowed for several things to take place for us. And so with the land being under the foundation, that meant that UCFPD now has jurisdiction on that property where they didn't before. It also allowed for the UCF students that live on that property to be held accountable to the UCF Code of Conduct, and it allowed for UCF to be able to provide a residence life program on that property. And we know that by simply having the residence life presence, that our students are going to do better, their behavior is going to be caught sooner, and it really did a great job for the university in helping turn around those town and gown concerns relatively quickly. And so as Arian mentioned before, our affiliation agreement with the property really allows for the residence life program to be there and to flourish in that traditional apartment complex environment where the management of the facilities, the housekeeping, the leases, all of that remains with the owner.
Great. Thank you so much. So for our listeners who may be exploring off-campus development opportunities, what advice would you give them when seeking support from university administration?
Yeah, great question. Again, my supervisor, Christy, provided some great pieces of advice for the listeners today. She encourages that everyone ensure that all internal university partners understand what the affiliation means and are supportive of that affiliation. One of the big pieces with that is that students and parents don't know the difference between affiliated housing and university housing. They think it's all the same. And so it's really important that when issues arise off campus and they wind up on the president's desk, we're working through those, and it may be difficult on our end because we're working with a partner. We still need to make sure that we do so swiftly for the customer, the student, and the parent. She also recommends that, working with an experienced housing provider is going to be a plus. Somebody who understands the housing market of the area, somebody who understands the laws associated with it, and somebody who probably is familiar with the university so that you can enter into an agreement on more of a common ground than maybe somebody who's just getting their feet started in the housing market. She also recommends ensuring that the lease includes language about holding students accountable to the university code of conduct. That has been very helpful since much of the lease is local and federal law-based. To be able to have that clause in there about the university code of conduct really allows us to move forward in some ways with students in this property than would be different at a traditional housing apartment complex. She also recommends having university staff involved in the facility itself, if at all possible. That way, when there is a bed bug issue or a mold issue or a leaky window issue, if you have your own staff there, they understand the importance to solve those problems quickly, knowing that the level of care expected by our parents and students is much higher than a traditional housing complex or apartment complex or other. And then she says her last piece of advice is to, as much as possible, be able to treat the property as your own. And so as much as university housing can be involved in that property, in managing that property, and facilitating what goes on in that property, the better it's going to be for the university as a whole.
Well, these are great tips for folks who are pursuing, or even those who are currently in, who have current affiliation agreements right now. And so from your lens and from your perspective, what is the reality of campus affiliations and what has it been like for you guys?
Generally speaking, I think it's very positive. There are some challenges that come along with it, but there are also some amazing opportunities. One, in terms of interacting with our surrounding communities and neighborhoods, we have the opportunity to revitalize some areas that are probably in need a little bit of what a university could bring to bear in those particular communities. Also for all personnel or staff working at the university, public-private partnerships, affiliated communities is something that's not going to go away, especially if the trend continues with the declining state and federal funds. So universities are going to have to get really smart about how they're spending their money, how they're building new construction for an increasing student population on the campuses of many different institutions. But there are some challenges that come along with partnerships, and these challenges oftentimes manifest themselves in educational conversations because the two stakeholders, or multiple stakeholders, depending on the affiliated property, are oftentimes looking through very different lenses, and they have very different priorities. So I would say, generally speaking, it is very positive. It is important, I think, as Dr. Stark mentioned, particularly with new construction, but even if you're going into a partnership with a pre-existing facility, to be very clear on expectations and responsibilities.
Great. Thank you. So we're going to move on to the next question that we have for you regarding campus affiliation agreements. So when we're looking at P3 projects, what type of issues or concerns are universities looking to the private sector to solve other than just a partnership to keep housing off their balance sheet?
So I think that one of the things that we're working on with a different one of our projects, our downtown project, which will open in a couple of years, is that we're looking for partners who understand the student experience at the university and how a facility can facilitate that experience. What I mean by that is, you know, we work with a residential curriculum here at the University of Central Florida, and being able to have conversations with a builder, with an architect, with a partner to say that we don't really need the large programming spaces that were needed before when we used to have, you know, 500 students at a program and we had a whole bunch of pizza and everybody was happy and yay. rather, we've moved to the curricular approach, which is much more focused on what the students learn as a result of living in our communities. And so we need smaller, more intimate spaces to be able to have one-on-one conversations with students or with an apartment. We need community spaces on each floor to be able to allow for community meetings to take place, where we're oftentimes teaching the students some aspect of conflict management or something of that nature as they live with us. And so being able to have that understanding on how the facility can help us achieve our educational goals is very, very helpful. I think that it's also important to work with a partner who understands the difference between what students want and what students need. Those things don't always align. And so sometimes the responsibility of a university housing aspect is to provide what students need versus what they want. So oftentimes you'll hear that students want their own room. They want their own bathroom. They don't want to have to interact with anybody. And that's great. And you can build those spaces. But what we find when we see students in those spaces is that they don't feel connected to the institution. They don't stay at the institution at the same rate as others who don't live in those types of environments, that they don't succeed academically like their peers who lived in shared spaces. And so that's kind of that push and pull. Mm-hmm. In terms of what students want versus what students need. That's really important in a partnership and making sure that we have that understanding. And I think, too, it's also similar to that, making sure that the partner understands that we're hoping to serve students for a long time and not just today's students, right? So we're at a point in time right now where we're transitioning generations. We're moving away from millennials and we're moving into the next generation, and they're going to have very different needs. Within 15 years from now, we're going to be serving a different generation. And so how can we have a partnership and a facility that will sustain time and the different types of students that we may see over time?
You had mentioned looking at a more curricular approach versus a traditional approach. And I'd like for you to share with our listeners, what does a curricular approach mean? What does that look like? How would one enter into that type of approach versus a traditional approach?
Sure. So with a curricular approach to residence life, we are very much focused on student learning. And so when you build a curriculum, you start with the question of what do you want students to learn as a result of living here? And then you fill in what's important for your institution. And then you build literal lesson plans and a curriculum surrounded around that, so that as students engage with staff and go through their experience for a year or 2 years with you, what are you hoping that they learn along the way? And putting in place strategies and initiatives that help achieve those learning goals. Where before, you may have the expectation that you have to have 5 social programs and 2 diversity programs. And it doesn't really matter what the students learned. It just mattered that the RA had the program and they recorded that the program happened and recorded their attendance, and that was about it. And so the curriculum approach, like I said, is very much focused on student learning in the housing environment. ACPA offers great resources on what the curriculum is. They're sort of the driving organization behind the development of the residential curriculum. And also RoomPack is now putting out some really great blogs and workbooks that explain what a curriculum is for those who are not familiar that want to do their own research on what that means.
Right. Those are great resources for others to do a little more research to define more information on curricular approach versus traditional approach. And for someone who has been in on-campus housing for years, there is a nice shift, especially with the student learning approach, using the curricular approach. So thank you for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. So we're going to move on to the next question that we have for you today. So what type of challenges regarding off-campus housing have you guys experienced that you would like to share with our listeners?
So when partnering with off-campus affiliated properties, one should anticipate some challenges, but they're also amazing opportunities for two-way learning. And this is oftentimes because both or multiple stakeholders are looking through very different lenses, right? They have very different priorities. So some of the challenges revolve around the difference or perspectives, for example, student development versus a pure business model. Now, we also know at universities and housing and residence life programs, we recognize that we are a business, but we also try and inextricably intertwine the student development experience into it, because it's not just about revenue generation. It's about what type of experience we want to provide to our students, our residents, our staff members who are going to go out into a larger society and affect society in those ways that we envision are possible, right? And then our priorities are different. So sometimes when we're having discussions with affiliated partners, there's a two-way exchange dialogue where we're talking about, we may be coming from a perspective of what's the best interest of the student in terms of their development and well-being, and also other things that we have to keep in mind, such as performance metrics and different laws that we have to adhere to, Title IX, and our partners may be looking through a lens where they're looking specifically at fair housing regulation, right? Dealing with tenant-landlord agreements or expectations. So I would say one area that could be a challenge is the difference of perspectives and priorities. Another one is academic calendars. And one of our affiliated properties, sometimes you'll have to have the conversation, particularly with a pre-existing affiliated property, that it is in the best interest to align the leasing calendar that best reflect the academic calendar. If not, what can happen is students who are living at our affiliated properties can be asked to vacate their housing before the end of a semester. So that presents some problems, because at the outset, when we go into this agreement, there's an expectation that's articulated and audibilized that students living in this affiliated property shouldn't feel like it's a different experience, much different than living on campus. But if they're asked to leave their residences before the end of the semester, i.e. during the finals period, that could definitely cause a little bit of, that can unsettle students at a critical point in their semester when they're really trying to focus in on their academics. So that's one thing. Academic calendars, leasing calendars need to be aligned, and that's a conversation, that's a challenge that can come up. Another challenge is not all affiliated properties, but because of the nature of what we do on campus in higher education and student affairs, we're having conversations around values and cultural competency, if not every other day, every day, right? It's regular. It's just baked into the sauce of what we do. We recognize that that is important to always keep in the forefront of our minds when we're interacting with residents and students and our staff members, understanding that's going to impact their experience. And then by design, it's going to impact how well they do academically, how integrated they're going to feel on campus. So we have to educate partners to the realities that they oftentimes may not think of initially, because they're not using the same language. They may not be privy to the same research. They're not executing a residential curricula, or may not understand the importance of an intentional plan around residential population. And at the heart of that can sometimes be values and cultural competency. And that can be different with affiliated properties, because again, they could be looking through a very different lens, right? A business model, of course, they want to provide a living experience that's going to bring their population back, but they may not know all of the fine details and nuances that student affairs professionals pretty much navigate daily. The other piece is budget. So depending on the affiliated property, one of the challenges one could experience, and I think this is some of the advice we give to anybody who's going in with new construction or pre-existing, is to really figure out a dedicated budget. So if there are certain things that need to happen immediately, changes to the amenities, something that is going to benefit the residents or the students who are living in this affiliated property, that see no difference between the affiliated property and on campus, that it's not going to, the Housing and Residence Life program in the university is going to be able to act swiftly or as swiftly as possible to improve the experience over there or to correct an issue. An example is if we recognize that there's a need for a staffing change. We have to reorganize staffing over there. Oftentimes, that has to be articulated to the stakeholder, the affiliated property, a manager, to be able to justify why we want to do it, particularly if it's going to take a hit to their budget, right? If it might take away an additional apartment. Say, hey, listen, based upon our resident-to-staff ratio, we think it's in our best interest if we added an additional grad or if we added an additional coordinator. Oftentimes, those conversations have to go back and forth because they immediately, not always, but sometimes they'll see that as revenue loss. And we have to make the connection for them in a way of saying, yes, there may be some revenue loss, but in the long run, it's going to improve the experience, which is going to help your occupancy management for the remainder of time that we're in partnership together, right? So this experience is going to sell itself, and these individuals are going to become walking advertisements. So simplifying the budget and having a dedicated budget for Housing and Residence Life to make some improvements or some staffing changes when necessary. So difference of perspectives when it comes to priorities, whether that's universities adhering to performance metrics or student development versus fair housing law, aligning academic and leasing calendars, being able to educate partners on the importance of adhering to university values and cultural competency, and simplifying the budget process when we want to make some changes, particularly around staffing reorganization.
Thanks, Arian, for that information. I think certainly education with our off-campus partners is important. But as I was listening to you talk, it also sounds like the relationship with those off-campus partners is significant in making sure everything flows appropriately. So can you talk to me a little bit about the relationship that you have with these off-campus partners? And do you have scheduled meetings with them once a month, once a year? How do you keep those relationships thriving?
And April, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Relationship is the cornerstone of making this a positive experience for both stakeholders. So I couldn't agree more strongly. In terms of establishing and maintaining relationships, yes, we meet with them regularly. Now, in my role as associate director, I'm supporting assistant directors who are directly supervising our live-in staff. So I'm looking at more of a bigger picture and drilling down when we have problems that might rise up. So the coordinators are meeting with the management over in our affiliated properties pretty regularly. They're meeting weekly, right? But then there are also quarterly meetings that take place. And at that quarterly meeting, my supervisor attends those with the assistant director who oversees our affiliated property, along with the two professional living coordinators, right? And at that meeting, it's a large group of people, and basically they reviewed a budget. It's very business oriented, but meetings are taking place regularly. There's open dialogue. We encourage our live-in staff to make sure that they're reaching out to our partners and having conversations early and often, particularly when we're encountering something, but to try and foresee any problems and get ahead of it. And we've been pretty successful. It's been pretty positive. There's been some challenges sometimes when it comes to getting our partners to understand different things that we take. I don't want to say they don't take it seriously, but in higher education, Title IX means something different for us than it means for them. Hmm. So when it comes to harassment or assault or any type of criminal activity, they're moving through or working through a lens of state law, fair housing. And oftentimes we have to remind them that the experience of on campus has to match the experience of off campus. And when we take our time to walk them through that educational process and to make that connection and how this is going to benefit them, I have found that they have been very receptive to that, which also strengthens our relationship, right? So they better understand, why are you telling us to move this student? Well, oftentimes we can't assume they're going to make that connection. I think, again, like I said earlier, some of the things we do and we think, we've been doing it for so long, it's just intuitive to us. But unless these affiliated partners have worked on campus or worked with on-campus housing and residence life program for a long time, they may not be able to make that connection. So I think being really patient, being educational, being receptive to what their priorities are, right? And meeting regularly, an open line of communication helps to maintain and strengthen our relationships with our affiliated partners.
So part of our audience represents administration at smaller schools who are looking to add housing for the first time. And so you've shared a lot of great information today. What other advice would you provide those individuals at smaller institutions who are looking to add housing?
Yeah, sure. One of our local community colleges here is looking to do just that. And so some of the things that I've watched them do and helped guide along the way is they've done a really great job surveying the housing market within their area, right? So with Orlando booming and things growing so fast, it's very important for them to have a good understanding of what the current housing market looks like near their campuses. Additionally, they've done a really great job reaching out to their student population. What type of housing would their students want, need? What does that look like? How can they either build or enter into a partnership that'll meet those students' needs? For them, they've identified that their large international student population is probably who they're going to keep in mind as they either build or enter into a partnership with a pre-existing property. And so they've done a really great job keeping in context the community needs, the student needs, and what the institution needs to better serve their students. I think it'll be important for them to also think through, you know, with the housing component comes all the housing things related to that. And what I mean by that is it's more than just a bed and a room and a bathroom and a sink, right? There is that student experience and that behavior and that safety education piece that goes with having a housing component to your program. And so one of the things that'll be really important for institutions looking to add housing would be thinking through either with themselves, if they're going to build, or with a partner that they're going to enter into, what that crisis management incident response might look like for them. An example would be here in Orlando, we experienced hurricanes. And with our affiliated property, more than just UCF students live there. So you have to be a student that lives in that property, but you could be at one of our three local community colleges, or you could be a UCF student. And so when we have a hurricane, we have a responsibility to provide options to the UCF students that live on that property and take care of them in the same way that we take care of our on-campus students. But the other students that live there have to fend for themselves. They have to go find their own resources to be able to hunker down and get through the hurricane in the way anybody who just residentially lives in the Orlando area. And so it's important to think through what that might look like, not just with hurricanes, because it depends on where you're located, but it's good to think through major incidents of crisis and safety, and what that could look like for the student population and the partner as you move forward from the beginning, rather than living through one and being like, oh no, I wish we had thought about this 8 years ago when we established our partnership. And then that way, it's a seamless response and experience for the students. You're able to take care of their needs in a way that they're expected, and oftentimes their parents are expecting. And it looks good for the institution, and it looks good for the property owners or managers as well.
Those are great, great advice.
Yeah, yeah. That right there, I think, is definitely worth the admission. So, well, guys, I appreciate it so much. And April, thanks for putting this together, because I think not just our off-campus audience listening to this, I think there's a lot of great information and just kind of overall understanding that everybody can grab from it, but as well as our own campus audience, a lot of them are looking for additional ways to improve what they're doing and working with off-campus partners to not necessarily extend what they're doing, but just to work in a more cohesive the world where the mission of getting students educated and giving them an experience that is going to make them better suited for the world at large. And it's I appreciate you guys coming on and sharing that with us. So, April, any other closing thoughts or questions?
No, I would just like to thank Dr. Stark and Arian Bryant for joining us today. You've provided some great information and insight and advice for our listeners to strengthen relationships or create new relationships and agreements with their off-campus partners. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Our pleasure.
My pleasure.
Well, April, again, you've done just a great job of finding our audience some folks that are really able to give us that on campus experience and explaining the affiliation process and what universities are looking at when selecting a housing partner. So, thank you so much for setting that up for everybody. And they're just really, Dr. Stark and Arian are just, really great people to talk to and very informative. And, we had a little bit of a conversation after that interview, and I've got going down to NAA's Campus Connects down in Orlando, middle of February, February 13th through 14th. Yes, Valentine's Day.
Better get your Valentine's ready.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, my wife will be joining me on this conference, but, so it's, we've already talked about, meeting up for coffee or something and kind of digging in a little bit more on, how they're doing things at UCF. So again, as they mentioned in their closing comments that, as far as their contact information, I'll have them, linked up in the LinkedIn announcements for this podcast. Feel free to reach out to them with any questions that you might have. April, thanks again. Try to stay warm.
Thanks, Wes. Thank you.
Again, this podcast was sponsored by Carter Young. If you're needing help, and I know everybody does, on collecting their bad debt accounts, make sure that you get in touch with Carter Young and find out how they've developed a platform specific for the student housing industry. Again, check them out at carter-young.com. Until next time, guys, have a great day.